Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It is another edition of Phillies Today. I'm your host, James Seltzer. It is Tuesday, May the 12th, as we continue to trudge along and continue to get through our new normal and the hope. The optimism of baseball on the horizon is, I'm sure, something that has gotten a lot of us excited and, you know, kind of hoping to get back to the reality we knew before. But there's a lot going into this right now, and obviously we'll get back to talking Phillies later in the week, next week, all that type of stuff, and we'll continue to try and have some fun. But there's some important stuff, and it really feels like we're reaching a cresting point, so to speak, of the whole discussion about the return of baseball and how it could happen and what it entails. And yesterday we dove into the broad strokes, the Bob Nightingale article, talking about the potential dispute between the players and the owners and what it would take and the money and getting back. And today and tomorrow, I want to get into that, like how it all affects the Phillies, like if we, you know, get past the money part of it and talk about the actual season that is being proposed to be played and the 82-game schedule and the only facing the like divisions and all that stuff. I want to get into the specifics and how it affects the Phillies and all that. But today, I want to talk a little bit more about the whole thing in general. I thought Jeff Passan had a really great article on Passan. Shout out to Jeff Passan. This dude's been all over this the entire time. Really, probably the clearest voice that we've had in terms of covering this situation from start to finish. And I want to dive into Passan's article yesterday, or this morning, excuse me, from ESPN.com, talking about this whole situation. And it talks about what a season could look like, but also dives into the financial ramifications and all that. So tomorrow we'll get into how this affects the Phillies and what it really could look like from a Phillies perspective. But let's dive into Passan's article, because I do think it is important and there's a lot of interesting stuff in here that ultimately matters to baseball fans. The article, Passan's 20 questions, why financial battle over 2020 MLB season is about to get really, really ugly. Not a great headline. All right, Passan dives in. This week is going to be ugly, he says. There's no getting around that. Every negotiation starts at opposite ends of a spectrum, and the chasm between Major League Baseball and the MLB Players Association is wide enough that as they navigate a return-to-play agreement to set the stage for the return of professional team sports in America, a fight is almost guaranteed. Not ideal, right? I mean, it's one of those things, and we talked this a little about this yesterday, the idea that, you know, any sort of fight about money, about standing, about all this type of stuff is going to ring on deaf ears right now in a country where the vast majority of people are experiencing far more hardship than any owner or player ever experiences. It just doesn't play well. The article goes on. Where these discussions go and how the principles involved steer them mark the most consequential moment for the sport since it barely averted a work stoppage in 2002. The coronavirus pandemic is altering the world. Unemployment is historically high. The future is impossible to forecast. And Monday, as MLB owners rubber stamp the league's proposal that it intends to share with the union in a meeting on Tuesday. The conversation focused around money. What followed surprised no one. This is not how it has to go, but it was how it was always going to go. Millionaires and billionaires pitted one against one another in a game of chicken. Stake out of position, refuse to budge. The coming days will reflect that ultimately the reality of a ticking clock forces its abandonment. When that happens, when the posturing abates, the ugliness will burn off like the morning fog and there will be hope for a deal for baseball. So what Passan's saying there is that, and look, we understand it. There's a lot of money involved here. There is a situation where players are assuming all the risk and the owners are still trying to ask them to take a bigger pay cut. You know where I stand on this if you listened to the show yesterday. If not, go back and listen to it. But I am firmly on the side of, at least, you know, as far as it goes, the players, so to speak, in this situation. But I think ultimately what Passan's getting to is that ultimately he believes cooler heads will prevail and that these sides will go at each other, but ultimately that the greater good will prevail, hopefully. Passan goes on. As the sport with the clearest path and greatest appetite to return, baseball is an opportunity to illustrate the importance of equitable shared sacrifice to be a model of togetherness amid division. And that is a very lofty and hopeful way to look at it, but he's right. I mean, this is a situation where ultimately there is a greater good. You know, there is a, this means more to people, to America, than maybe the particulars of the deal, so to speak. The idea that, yes, we might have to lose a little bit in order for everyone else to gain. And I think that's incredibly important in this situation. Passan goes on. All of that, of course, is merely talk. Admittedly naive, unquestionably hopeful. Ignoring what's of greater import than rich people being a little less rich. That if baseball does relaunch, it does so with the health and safety of players, managers, coaches, and all those in its orbit in mind. That it prioritizes what warrants prioritization. What baseball needs in the end is neither words nor bluster. It is substance, foresight, action. And over the next 2 weeks, as the season hangs in the balance, action there will be. It's up to the leaders of both sides to decide what sort. So strong words from Passan, and he's right. I 100% agree with him, you know. Ultimately, this is a time for action. This is a time for players and owners to figure this crap out, to bring baseball back for America, and to not be seen squabbling over money. When, as he said, millionaires and billionaires fighting over money right now is about the last thing any American wants to see. All right, he goes on. What is the return to play proposal? In broad terms, and this is what we've talked about yesterday, but he outlines it pretty succinctly. A 50-50 split of revenue from the 2020 season, an 82-game schedule instead of the standard 162, a mid-June, quote-unquote, spring training and early July opening day, a 14-team postseason rather than the typical 10, games played in home stadiums where allowed, designated hitters in the American and National League, games against only divisional and regional opponents, i.e. AOS teams play AOS teams and NOS teams. Expanded rosters from 26 to as many as 30 active players with a 20-man taxi squad of minor league players and prospects. No fans in stadiums to begin the season. He says there are certainly more details of the proposal, including vital ones regarding health and safety. It's also important to recognize that this is an initial proposal that serves as a starting point for any return-to-play scenario and will necessitate a rigorous back-and-forth with amendments galore before it satisfies both parties. So I think he lays it out pretty well here. And this is, we'll dive into tomorrow. We'll dive into how all this affects the Phillies. What does an 82-game schedule mean for the Phillies? What does a 14-team postseason mean for the Phillies? What does the designated hitter in both leagues mean to the Phillies? But for now, kind of on a macro scale, what this means for baseball and for everyone involved. He goes on. what was the player's reaction to it? And was that a stupid question? Yes, is the answer. And he says, why? He says, because the first item, the 50-50 revenue split, is a non-starter for the players. And this is something we talked about yesterday, and you know where I stand. Passing goes on. Before explaining, it's essential to understand how revenue works in baseball. He goes on to talk about salary cap systems, straight revenue splits, and which sport-related income is pooled and distributed among, according to formulas agreed upon in collective bargaining negotiations. With capped system, MLB operates with no salary cap. Passan says, in baseball, there are two streams of revenue, local and national. Local revenue includes television contracts, which range from around $20 million a year to upwards of $250 million a year, and in-game proceeds. Major League Baseball estimates that 40% of revenue comes from tickets, concessions, and other gate-related income. Nearly half of local net revenue is pooled and shared. National revenue comes from television contracts for the postseason and games of the week. League-owned media entities, MLB Advanced Media, as it's known, MLB Network, licensing, merchandising, and corporate sponsorships. All national revenue is shared equally. He goes on. The pandemic has turned off the revenue spigot. Whether local revenue accounts for 40% of teams' incoming cash or a cut in the 30s, as past reports have suggested, the prospect of going a full season without fans and potentially going fan-free or at least fan-light into the 2021 season is daunting for teams' bottom lines. Because all 30 teams' revenue streams differ, it is realistic to believe that some teams will lose money playing games without fans this season. Already, multiple teams are playing layoffs or furloughs starting June 1st, according to sources. Owners are looking to cut costs wherever they can, and nothing costs more than player salaries. So while the league and union in March agreed to pay players on a prorated basis at 82 games, they would receive 50.6 of their expected 2020 salaries. The owners believe that language in that agreement allows them to renegotiate player wages in the event of games with no fans, and the players vehemently disagree. He says he'll get back to that later, but that was the crux of what we were talking about yesterday. The idea that the players agreed to this prorated deal, and now the owners are saying, no fans, let's change that. And that is an issue. How bad for the players would a split of 50-50 revenue actually be? He warns of this in back napkin math, an attempt to estimate revenues, but he says ballparking revenue tend to be a fool's errand. In short, a 50-50 split is a huge error, but indulge me, it's more to make a point. He said Forbes estimated MLB's industry-wide revenues in 2019 at $10.7 billion. Club sources have suggested the number was lower, but in that ballpark. So let's use the higher number, but use teams estimate that 40% of local revenue will vanish without ticket sales. That leaves $6.4 billion. Sources have estimated that local television revenue is somewhere between $2.2 and $2.5 billion annually. Because teams under this plan would play only half the games, that's half the revenue, say $1.2 billion. And that does not account for regional sports networks, which pay local TV rights fees, potentially asking for a discount based on the difference in the product, whether it's because there are no fans in the stands or because teams are forced to play away from home thanks to government regulations. Ignoring that possibility, we're down to $5.2 billion. Passing goes on. National TV money is estimated at $1.7 billion a year. The point of implementing expanded playoffs would be to grow that pool, so you make a little more money off the playoffs. In the current system, MLB's guaranteed number of playoff teams is 26 and its maximum is 43. Expanded playoffs would swell those numbers to 36 and 59. That translates to hundreds of millions of extra dollars in postseason revenue, bumping the overall revenue back into the mid-$5 billion range. Losses in other areas are almost a given, dropping revenue back to perhaps $5 billion, which admittedly seems high, especially if owners are claiming they could lose money this year. Still, it makes the prospect of a 50-50 split with players interesting financially. Players' salaries for 2020 are estimated to be somewhere between $4.2 billion and $4.4 billion. He said, let's take the middle and go with 4.3. At a prorated salary of 50.6% of games, that's around $2.18 billion. We're getting very mathy here. Half of $5 billion would be $2.5 billion. So he said, could the players potentially be guaranteed more money in a 50-50 split? It's possible, sources said, but looking at it strictly from a revenue perspective ignores three issues critical to the union. Anything with even the slightest relation to a salary cap system frightens players, even if the proposal doesn't involve a salary ceiling and other cap tenants. The mistrust between players has deepened in recent years. He says salaries also do not grow commensurate with revenue gains. So now in a year in which players in the game is struggling, is it necessary for players to share the losses? That's not how it works. And thirdly, he says, if a second wave of the coronavirus were to strike before the postseason and force the cancellation of games, postseason and TV money would vanish. Even if the estimated revenues were $5 billion, that would crater the cancellation of playoff money and leave the players with less money than their prorated share would have been with. To really understand what the players think about the revenue split idea, one needed only to hear what MLBPA Executive Director Tony Clark told The Athletic. Quote unquote, a system that restricts players' pay based on revenues is a salary cap, period. This is not the first salary cap proposal our union has received, and it probably won't be the last. That the league is trying to take advantage of a global health crisis to get what they failed to achieve in the past and to anonymously negotiate through the media for the last several days suggests they know exactly how this will be received. None of this is beneficial to the progress of finding a way for us to safely get back on the field and resume the 2020 season, which continues to be our sole focus. Not great. Strong words as well there. And citing the fact they're trying to take advantage of the crisis is a very strong statement. Passing goes on. He says, MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred had to expect some sort of response to the 50-50 split, but that was a response, he says. He goes on to say, so this, let's say the Kumbaya parabellum where you were spouting earlier about peace and love and harmony doesn't come to fruition because the impediment of money is intractable. What's the worst case scenario here? No season at all, Passan says. He says, that doesn't sound right. What? The union refused. He says, uses his example. He says, since then, baseball has seen 25 years. Talking about 1994 when the strike happened, there have not been... it's been the most peace since the union was founded in 1966. He's saying they could lose a season over that. In fact, for argument's sake, let's assume they do. What are the outcomes for each side? The players, they don't get paid the lump sum of money, blah, blah, blah. Look, we know what the lump sum, what the outcome of this is. This is a disaster. Not financially. I think all these people will be fine. I think it's more a disaster from an optics standpoint. The fact that money, when 30-plus million people in America have lost their jobs, the fact that money was the reason people couldn't play baseball and that we couldn't have our sport back and something to give us hope and happiness and enjoyment and distraction in this tough world that we're living in right now, it's because of money? It's a bad look. So he comes on. He goes on to say, Passan continues to dive in, talking about, you know, whose outcome is worse and so on and so forth. And then he says, why are players so entrenched? For one, he says, union lawyers believe that they're in the right legally when it comes to guaranteeing players' prorated salary. The March agreement contains player compensation and benefit section that does not specifically address a reduction in salary if games are played and no fans. That said, on page one of the agreement, the first point of the resumption of play section includes the words, the 2020 championship season shall not be commenced unless and until the following conditions are satisfied, and one of those conditions is playing fans in front of spectators. So if and when conditions exist for the commencement of the 2020 championship season, so on and so forth. So here's the thing. I mean, are we talking about, we're getting into real minutia here. You know, we're getting into real minutia when it comes to figuring out who said what and what it means and so on and so forth. Passan goes on to talk about the hazard of it all. You know, how big of an issue is health and safety? The players want to stay healthy. They want to keep their family safe. They want to keep everyone involved safe. We talked about that a little bit yesterday and whether that's a part of the agreement. He says, and again, that's going beyond the legal. You hope this is not just a legal issue of figuring out the interpretation of what was said. Pazin goes on, he talks about the importance of testing, the importance of the health and safety of it. He says, in addition to actual health concerns, moral authorities up for grabs. If one side is the billionaires who want to save money and the other is the players who want to ensure their families, older employees, outside workers, and themselves are as insulated from the coronavirus as possible, well, even in the most dyed-in-wool corporatists may have trouble maligning the players for focusing on that. If the sides can't come to an agreement, it's an awfully hard sell for the league that it didn't happen because the players wanted too much testing. And I think he's fair there. He says it's fairly clear what the league wants. How about the union? The fact is they want their money too, he says. And Clark saying as much didn't exactly boast their ability to ride a health and safety platform, which is true. Practically speaking, the players want information. Teams say they're going to lose money. Fine. Let's see how. Give us a financial audit. And I think that's fair. I think if owners are going to cry poor and say we're losing so much money, that's why you got to take a pay cut to the players. Show them. Say, hey, look, here's how we're losing money. I think that's only right and just, to be honest. I wholly support the players there. So Pazin goes on to say, so are the owners going to yield? He says, well, most of them didn't become billionaires by accident. Unless they've evolved overnight, they will push and cajole and hold out for the best deal, knowing that in the end, fans often side with teams over players, which is crazy to me. He says they can say they're losing money and want their workers' salaries to reflect that like it does in so many places across America, even if players already agreed to the March deal to structure what they have their salaries. He says, then again, a truth underpins the entire negotiation. If ever there were a time for billionaire owners to do good, not in paying players per se, but in avoiding the catastrophic fallout of baseball, adding to a national unemployment rate approaching 15%, it's now. And if ever there were a time for millionaire players to shed cynicism and adopt not a mean of war, but one of mutually beneficial deal making, it's now. So he said, what's the solution? Pazin says, to start, maybe make Tuesday's meeting not about the 50-50 split or any finances. Try to answer questions posed thus far by people and other players emphasizing a plan about how to restart a sport in the middle of a pandemic. Stop making it about money. Make it about health and safety. He says, there's no easy solution here. And he says that, you know, if the cash flow problems are real for owners, players could defer a portion of their salary. There are other ways around this. He says, you know, goes on. Ultimately, he asks, will a deal get done? And he says, I go back to BATNA, which is the old deal, and I think yes. But then I go back to the strike, and I think the BATNA doesn't mean anything. The hope is that MLB learned its lesson from 1994. The truth is that we won't know until a deal is struck or it falls apart. So here's a little advice. Don't get too hung up on this week. It's easier to be a prisoner of the moment, to get high when it looks like baseball is coming back, to get low when the conversation turns to money. This is the beginning, and the beginning can be complicated and tumultuous and not particularly reflective of the actual state of play. That's coming soon, and when it does, I will say as much about the future of baseball as it does about the present. So I think the main point here is that Pazin saying, hey, there's optimism for baseball, but there are real issues that these sides are very far apart on. Now, ultimately, and this is the point I made a lot yesterday, and I'm sure I'll continue to make, but in my mind, figure it out. I know it seems simple. It seems reductive. It is reductive, but figure it out. I don't care. Look, I'm sorry, billionaires. If you have to take a hit for a year, a couple years, I'm okay with that. I'm sorry. I just am. And millionaires too. If you have to take a hit for a year or two, I'm okay with that too. I just am. And look, I think the players are going to take a much bigger hit comparatively. First of all, because they don't have billions, but also because free agency this offseason is going to be depressed. Everyone's going to be depressed. Teams lose money, they're going to be willing to spend less money. Period. That's it. End of story. That's how it works. So they're already going to take it. Ultimately, I believe it is on the owners to step back and say, all right, what can we give the players that will make them happy, but will make sure baseball happens? Because it is more important that baseball happens than any of this other stuff gets figured out. The money, logistics, all that, like, you know what? That's life. Sometimes you get a raw deal, like all of America has, like all of the world has with this coronavirus. We got a raw deal. In this case, I think that you know, sometimes the owners might have to take a raw deal. I'm sorry. But we need baseball, and more than anything, we need baseball to not happen because a bunch of millionaires and billionaires are fighting. That is the biggest thing. That is the number. I think we can all agree. If anything else comes out of this, is that these guys fighting over billions and millions of dollars, get over yourselves. Think about the greater good. I think that's the biggest takeaway. All right, tomorrow we'll continue to talk about this. It's the only thing to talk about. It is everything. And then we will also get into the specifics. How does it affect the Phillies? How does an 82-game season, playing only the AL and the NL East, the Universal DH, all that stuff affect the Phillies? That'll be fun to discuss. Maybe a little lighter than the, you know, millionaires and billionaires arguing over money stuff. But we'll continue to talk about it all as we continue to get through this and hope for baseball to return. So until tomorrow, thank you for listening to another edition of Phillies Today right here on the Phillies 24/7 Network.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.